Dr. Green, Melvin Green, and he has a company called, he's an author, he's a professor, and he has a company called Taxes R Us. Now, don't think it's like Toys R Us, they went out of business. Taxes R Us is nationwide and going strong. Melvin Green, how are you, sir?
I'm fine, sir. Thank you. How are you?
I am simply marvelous. It's the 11th hour. What can we do?
This is the 11th hour for actually tax return preparation, so there's a lot of things that we can do. Obviously, you can do the last minute run where you try to get your taxes done at the last minute. However, there are options. One of the options are filing a tax extension. And the extension will give you time to file your return and get your information together. The typical extension is a six-month extension. So if you were to file that on or before April 18th, which is Tuesday, that would extend your returns until October. There's good and bad with the extensions. The good part is you extend the time to file the return, but you do not extend the time to pay the tax liability. So if you have an estimated tax that you think is going to be due, you need to pay that on or before April 18th.
Now, but let's say I don't have the money now. I need to file an extension, but I don't have the money now. What do I do? And how is that going to impact the fund?
You still need to file the extension because what the extension will do is it will keep them from imposing a penalty. So if you don't file an extension and you don't file the return and you owe money on your taxes or additional liabilities, the penalty is 5% per month to a maximum of 25%. And the interest rate is 1.5% per month until it is paid. So if you actually file the extension, the penalty portion of it would not be applicable.
What else? I mean, is there anything else people who need to file taxes can do? Are there any other options?
As far as extending the time, there really isn't, other than filing the extension. Or if you're in a situation where you're going to be typically get a refund, then you do not need to file an extension. Because if you are in an overpaid situation, there is no penalty. It was just really just filing the return, that's all. There's really nothing else you can do. The other thing that people can do, if you are in a situation where you're going to owe taxes, there are some tax planning things that you can still do right now. One of those things is that you may be able to qualify and also participate in a IRA, which would actually be a tax benefit for you. So you can actually pay into a traditional IRA that would lower your tax burden at this point, and you would have up until Tuesday, April 18th, to fund that.
Now, where do I go get an IRA?
Well, you can go to your regular bank that you have, any local bank, or you can go online to a lot of the different platforms that are out there, the E-Trade, the Ameritrade, the Charles Schwab's. There's a number of venues out there that you can use to fund those accounts. So typically what people do if they're in a situation where they have a substantial liability and they qualify, they would go ahead and fund that, and then they could file the return and you get the immediate deduction for that amount of the IRA. Typically that amount is limited to $6,000. So a $6,000 deduction for you, let's just say if you were at a 20% tax bracket, that would typically mean a $1,200 tax credit for you that would immediately reduce your taxes by that amount that would be due on or after April 18th of this year.
That tells me a lot of people, right now, if I filed a date and I did, what is it? Automatic filing, online filing, or something like that.
Yes, e-file.
and I did it online, where would I get my money?
But if you e-file, what I'm experiencing at Tax R Us is that within 5 to 7 days, the refunds are deposited into your account if you choose to have it automatically deposited into your account. The checking process would take maybe a week later. I would think in 2 weeks you would probably have it by check. What I'm experiencing right now is 5 to 7 business days. It is a refund that would be deposited into your bank account.
Say that I don't have time, or I feel that I don't have time to go to taxes, or can I go to the IRS, or there's some cities that have people working with them to help prepare taxes, and is that a good place to go? Are they good places to go to have the IRS do my taxes?
I don't, it would be very difficult to get the IRS to do anything for you at this point, because they have a ban, meaning that you can't go into their offices unless you have an appointment. So that's pretty much out of the question. These other companies like the HR Box, the H&R Box, or whoever doing the tax returns may bring you into their office and do it. But I think the beauty of Tax R Us is that we are nationwide, and what we do is we can actually accept people's information electronically. So if I get copies of your documents and things like that, and it goes into our site, then we can actually file that for you online and communicate with you back and forth via telephone or through just live comments. So we can actually get that information to you fairly quickly. So our turnaround time is really very quick, and it's not one of those things that you have to go to somebody's office and sit down and talk to them, because we can do that all online and communicate that information back to you and file it and transmit it to the IRS within a few hours.
Melvin, we got to take a break, but I want to know, I need my money today. Can I do that, and is that a wise thing to do? I'll be right back here on the Ross Zone. And we're talking to Melvin Green from Taxes R Us, and we're talking about filing and deadlines and deductions and that kind of thing. But I see these ads on the television. If you file today, you can get your money today. Is that wise?
I don't personally believe that's wise for most people. People are under different types of financial strain, so depending on what they need the money for, but it's an expensive ordeal, because you can get your money, I can file your returns for you today, and I can get your money instantaneously, but the fees are pretty high. If you weigh the options and say, I don't feel like waiting for 5 to 7 days to get my money, and I want it today, are you willing to pay the price that they're going to charge you to get it? The thing is, it's all about your financing and also trying to plan properly. So if you plan properly, we had from January to get the money. Why is it such a rush at the end? So I think it's just better tax planning. People need to take their time and manage their time and also get the return. So I would not pay the extra fees to get something that I'm entitled to anyway. But like I said, personal situations will dictate the final outcome.
An example, let's say I'm going to get $3,000 back. I just picked the number, $3,000. And I want to get it today. I don't want to wait for 70. Approximately, how much is that $3,000 going to cost me to get today?
It could be 5 to 10% of what that refund would be. So if we're talking 10%, it could be as much as $300, or it could be as little as $150. So it may not be enough for some people to deter people, but it would deter me, because I think that's a lot to pay for something that's yours anyway.
Makes sense to me. Now, let's say I called you up and I'm communicating with you, and we're doing electronic stuff and Zooming and all kinds of stuff. And last year, questions do I have?
There's a lot of deductions that you would have, but first of all, you would have to qualify to itemize. So if you're itemizing, that means that your deductions are going to be in excess of the standard deduction. So the standard deductions for a single person is 12,900, and if you're talking about a married couple, that number is 26,000. So if your deductions are going to be higher than that, the deductions that you could take would be the mortgage interest, the real estate taxes, and some of the closing costs that you would have on the home. So if you pay points on that house, or if you pay prepaid some of the property tax for the next year, or you prepaid interest for the period until the loan kicked in, all of those items would be deductible. But I think the other duty that you get into with the home is if you did any type of improvements to the home, like energy efficiency, then those costs would be also filled out on the form 5695, which is a residential credit form, and you would get credits for those things that enhance the energy efficiency of your home. And those things would be like doors, windows, insulation into the walls. And now with the new laws, what they have is for, you know, if you had to put in a new furnace, a new hot water heater, or you put in an insert into a chimney or something like that, a fireplace, those things also create other credits for you without having to itemize. So those are the benefits that you will reap for having a home.
What about, I owned my home last year, but I put solar in, or I put a new furnace in, or I put new windows in. Do I get a deduction for that?
So you don't get a deduction for it. What you get is you get a tax credit. So that means a dollar-for-dollar deduction. So that means, let's just say, if you put in something like a furnace, and that credit is capped at $600. So if you actually owe $600 on your tax return and you put in the furnace, then you would have a no tax, then it would be a zero, net zero, no tax at all, because the credit would be enough to eliminate the tax that would be imposed.
What about solar?
Now,
go ahead.
Nothing, still.
No, I was just going to say, you hear this stuff about if you put solar in, if you do this, if you do that, are there any other advantages tax-wise for solar?
Yeah, I have solar on my own home. I installed it. And the reason I installed it is twofold. One, the credits that you would get for installing solar in the first year, the federal government gave a credit of 25% of the cost of solar. And then the state that I'm in gave a 20% cost credit. So the total package is a 55% on the dollar. So it's for every dollar I spend, the city, between the federal government and the state, they gave me 55 cents. So it's only costing me 45 cents on the dollar to get it. And my energy price, so my solar bill has cut my energy price almost to nothing. You could figure my utility bill before solar was running about $300 a month. Now my solar bill is $14.43 a month. So it's a huge difference. And the good part about the credits are, if you don't have enough liability to utilize all of the credit in 1 year, it is a 5-year carry forward. So you can use that credit for 5 years if you didn't use it all in year one. Those are the benefits.
Now, let's say last year I bought a rental property. What kind of deductions, or what kind of tax savings, or what kind of tax credits can I get?
Oh, there are many, and that's a great subject matter, because when you buy a rental property, everything that's related to that rental property is now an item that can be either deducted or depreciated. So the big thing for everyone is that once you for 27.5 years. And also, any of the fix-up costs or maintenance of the lawn cutting, the utility costs, any kind of decor that you're doing, if you're decorating the house for whatever reasons, your transportation back and forth, if you hire people to clean it, you have people to do other work for you, handy-type work, or if you're in an HOA, those types of things, all of those, and if you also have a management company, all of those fees are now deductible. And the good part about that is that income that you will receive probably in the first year or two will not be enough to compensate for the expenses. Therefore, what would happen is those losses that you would have on the property would then flow through to your personal tax return and reduce your AGI, which would put you in a lower tax bracket. AGI meaning adjusted gross income, and now you're paying less tax, which is really where you want to be. And that's why people buy these properties, because at the end of the day, it's going to be less of a tax burden for them and allowing them to pay the legal minimum tax.
I always tell people, on my show, I tell people where I think the best places are to buy rental property. And I've always said, besides the logical places like the beaches or the mountains or any vacation or resort area, but I always say student housing. Buy houses in areas where there are colleges, because they always need housing. And there was a study just came up that the country's student housing rent rose 7% year over year in March, hitting a record of about $800 to $900 per bed. Now, this is from the colleges, so you know what's happening for people who own houses in the area of colleges. Or maybe they have a child going to the college and they buy a house and rent rooms out to different students. I guess this is just solidified what I've been thinking. But when we come, we're going to talk more about student housing, because I want to ask you more about that, Dr. Green. But we have to take a break, and we'll be right back with Dr. Green talking about what? Taxes.
The Wealth Zone is brought to you by R8@3&Associates. Pick up the phone and give us a call at 855-577-9100. If you have anything to do with real estate, anything to do with money, anything to do with budget, pick up the phone and give us a call. Let's talk. This is an exciting time, and opportunities are out there. So tell me now, we were talking about student housing in high rent. Are college towns good towns to buy rental property?
If I were to buy a rental property, it would be in a college town, because there are waiting lists to get in there, because there's so many students that need housing and there is a scarcity. It's not enough volume there. That means that the property values are going to cost a little bit more to get there, to buy those homes that is in those communities that are surrounding the colleges. But you will never have a vacancy, because there's always going to be people that are in need for those housing. And the good part about it is you don't have to worry about the rental income coming in, because most of the parents are paying it. It's not the students. So you're almost insured that you're going to get your money.
Exactly. And that's why when you go to a college, the first week or two that you're there, there's always somebody that's pushing credit cards, because they know when students get these credit cards, who's going to pay it? The parents. It's just another trap that we fall into. But if you look at other rents, I know that office projects right now, office buildings, they're trying to find a ways now to turn office buildings into housing, because housing is needed
and there's less and less of a need for office buildings, and they're trying to find something to do with them. But if you were to get it, I know you said you were buying in a college town. Is there any other rental property that you would look at?
I definitely would look at multi, so I would look at something that was bigger than a four flat or something like that. I just wouldn't want to get hung out there in just a one-dwelling home, because it's hard to make money on a one-dwelling home, because there's only so much you can get off of it. Depending on the neighborhood, of course, everything's about location. But if you're in the proper location, I would just rather have a multi-family unit that I could actually buy into and rent, and that way, if you only have one house and that person stops paying, so do your income stop. But if you have multi-units, and let's say it's a six flat, which means there's six house units in it, then if one person stops paying, you still have five that are paying. So I would leverage my bedding with that and buy multi-family units as opposed to a single dwelling home. That's just my personal fit.
Yeah, and I think it's good, but it's good. See, multifamily, to me, is also good for owner-occupants, because they could, if they can't afford to buy a single family, they're living in an apartment now, they could buy a multifamily, live in one of the units, and the other units, whether it's two, three, four, or five, can pay their mortgage for them, and they'll be living there for rent-free. It's the best, to me, a multifamily, even if it's for owner-occupant, it's just don't let the people know that you're the owner, but other than that, it's a great investment, and it's also a great place to live. I know we got how many days left till Monday? Is it Monday at midnight or something?
No, it's Tuesday at midnight.
Tuesday at midnight. And how can people reach you?
You can reach me via my web, and that is www.melvingreen.com. So that's www.melvingreen.com. And what we do at Tax RRS is not only that we do tax preparation, but we also do tax planning, and we also do audit resolution. So there's a lot of things that we do. So I think if you would go into our website, look at it, and look at what we do, and look at some of our podcasts that we do, and also just look at some of the things that we have posted out there that gives you the blogs of what we're doing on a day-to-day basis, that helps you get into a better financial situation, because we are like the wealth zone. We're trying to get people to not only create wealth, but to encourage you to have generational wealth.
And what do you mean? What do you mean? For our new listeners who don't know, that don't listen to this show all the time, what is generational wealth?
Generational wealth is biblically driven, because even in the Bible it says, a good man will leave an inheritance to his children's children. So what that means is that we need to not only just create something that makes our lives more comfortable, but we need to look at our family members, whether it's your children or your neighbors or whoever. You just want everybody to have an upscale lifestyle, and that they don't have to struggle like our forefathers had to do. So we don't want to start from ground zero. We want to start with something so that we can go ahead and continue to grow and be prosperous in what we do. And that's what I call considering generational wealth. So we're getting something. We're not starting from zero. We have money. We can go out and invest. All we need is someone to mentor us and tell us where we need to put those funds, like you are, Dr. Starks, where you can't go out and tell people, hey, give us a call, and we can help you get to the next steps. So this is creating generational wealth. So we are piggybacking on what you're doing. We're doing the same types of things that you're doing, but we're just doing it at a much lower level and with more transparent, probably, than just buying a house or something of that nature.
Yeah, and the thing that bothers me, the thing thing that really concerns me about generational wealth, there was, our grandparents all grew up somewhere other than where we were. And they grew up from slavery. And then they worked the land even after they were quote-unquote free. And they saved up. And they worked and bought land and got houses. And then we went north and we started living in apartments. And when they passed and left us that land, we let it go. We're doing the same thing. We're letting houses, and housing is generational wealth. When you are left the house, you have a responsibility to take care of that house and make it profitable for you. And that's what we can help you do. But how do we reach these people, Dr. Green, on not get their advertisements all over the television? We buy your property. We buy your property. How do we stop the mentality of getting rid of our property?
I think one of the things, really education, right? So you just have to be able to get the attention of the people who have those properties or have those scenarios, and you have to be able to communicate to them. The problem is that by the time we find out who those people are and people who are being looked after or people who are actually trying to buy their properties, we only find out about that property being sold after it's sold. So that's too late in the game. So what we need to do at a ground roots level is start to say to people, even on this radio station, hey, if you have property, before you sell it, talk to Dr. Starks to find out whether or not that's a good idea. Bounce it off of somebody. Don't just make the decision based on what's in your pocket right now.
Yeah, it is a scary proposition. Dr. Green, thank you so much. And give out again your website for Taxes R Us.
Again, the website for Taxes R Us is www.com. The other thing I'd like to say is that you still have time to get your taxes filed for this year. If you don't have time to pull everything together, you do need to file an extension just to be on the safe side. That extension will give you more time to file your returns. And I think the people need to understand is that extensions weren't made for us. It was made for someone else, but we are the beneficiaries of that. So if you need more time to do your return, file the extension. Because you don't want to start filing returns and miss something, you have to file an amended return. Because when people amend a return, they're not amending the returns to pay additional money. They're amending returns to get refunds back, which then gives the IRS an opportunity to say, if they're asking for money back, let's audit them.
Dr. Green, thank you so much, and you have a blessed week, and we'll have you on again. Thank you so much.
Okay. Thank you to your listening audience and to you too, sir. Thank you.
Thank you.